This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
One, opening day. You know who's healthy? You know who's happy? Fans of the World Series champion Texas Rangers. But let's put baseball on the operating table. Is baseball sick or healthy with a World Series champion? Two, is the problem preachy women? James Carville says the problem with woke ideology is that it's run by preachy women. Let's ask Tommy Lahren. And three, how much money to be happy? Will $1.13 billion in Mega Millions make you happy? Can you keep it? Where would that put you in your city? Is it enough, $1.13 billion? It's the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com, on the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News YouTube page, the Fox News Facebook page. It's everywhere, live streaming at 12 o'clock Eastern, Monday through Thursday. But here's the deal. It's also always on demand whenever you want it in audio format at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Just hit subscribe, or right under the description of this live stream, there is a link to subscribe to The Will Cain Show on YouTube. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to get up early, very early. I'm going to head out to Globe Life. The debate is, should I wear my Rangers hat? I obviously wear my Rangers fandom. I mean, 2023 World Series champion. And now it's Major League Baseball opening day. But I am curious about the state of baseball. I'm also curious about how this conversation will go. I've never met my first guest, but just watching him on TV, I feel like, well, he's going to be real. And I really don't know, you know, how it will go if I ask him about the health of his favorite sport. So let's just find out. Let's get to it with story number one. AJ Pierzynski is a 2005 World Series champion. He's Fox Sports Major League Baseball game analyst. He's also the host of Foul Territory on X, and he's already got a serious face. So this will be good. Let's just see.
No. You scared me at first because you said three things. And the first one I'm okay with. The second one, I was like, man, if we're going to talk about what you said, I'm like, you got the wrong guy because James Carville is probably smarter about that than I am. And then three, yes.
You don't want to talk about?
Not really. and then three, can you please give me the $1.13 billion and I'll find plenty of ways to spend it.
Have you seen, AJ, how many lotto winners lose it? This is what I'm going to talk about at the end of the show. And why can't they keep the money? And so I'm fascinated with how much money actually makes you happy. And then there's these studies that show it's actually very, and this is not for better or for worse, just the way it is. We compare ourselves. So like, you know, you want to make more than your neighbor, like more than you want to improve your own standard of living. And so I don't know what goes on with these lotto winners. Maybe they have no history with money. You probably have history with that, AJ. I mean, athletes are notorious for guys that may not have a history of making a lot of money. And then all of a sudden they have a ton. And what goes up comes down real quick after their playing days.
Of course, you stop making it, right? You make a ton real short, right? So you make all this money in like a 10-year span, and then all of a sudden, guess what? You're a former player, and you don't make anything. So yeah, there's been guys I know that have been taken for money. There's been guys I know that don't keep an eye on their money. They think the money's always going to be rolling in. And listen, I understand to the average person, like $1 million, $2 million is a ton of money. But in the grand scheme of things, when you're only making that money for a 10-year period and it's a very small window, guess what? That money goes away fast when guys are buying, you know, expensive cars, designer outfits, new homes for everybody. It goes quick and you see it all the time. I mean, heck, there was a 30 for 30 there for a while that, you know, got broke athletes and this and that and all that. And heck, we saw it the other day. Some big famous name in baseball got taken for a bunch of money. So he says just the other day.
By the way, professional athletes wouldn't be unique there, AJ. Like, everybody thinks that their current situation is going to be the way it always is in the future. I have friends that are in financial management, and they talk about these guys like who think that, oh, I'm making X today, and next year will be X plus 20%, and then, you know, 20 years from now will be X times 2 or whatever it may be. And so there's just no inclination, and we know the stats on this. Like, nobody saves. Like, we're a debt-based society, so it shouldn't be surprising at all. We shouldn't, like, laugh at pro athletes who think, oh, I'm making $10 million a year, and I'm 32. Of course I'll be making still $10 million a year when I'm 55 and I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah, it works like that, because there's a lot of 55-year-old Major League Baseball players running around, right? They're making $10 million a year. If you can name one, please let me know, because I looked all through Baseball Reference. I couldn't find one.
Do you think, AJ, I'm just going to follow my curiosity here. You know, like, Tom Brady extending his career into his 40s was, like, a little bit mind-blowing for everybody. Like, he way outlived the bell curve. I mean, Max Kellerman was predicting him to go over the cliff for, like, 5 straight years. And he apparently sprouted wings and flew over the cliff. But, like, I mean, we're seeing like, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer's, I think, is he 40? And he's got injury issues, but you think baseball players start playing a lot longer into their 40s?
No, I don't. I think they're rare exceptions. Listen, I made it till I was 40. I retired at 40, and I was done. Physically, but mentally, just get worn out. I mean, think about Justin Verlander, said he wants to be Tom Brady, played till he's 45. Well, he's already got some injuries, right? He had Tommy John. He's got some injuries this spring that are keeping him down. Scherzer's at 40. He's got some injuries. It just doesn't happen. It's a young man's game now. It's a young man's sport because, one, the travel wears you out. The media wears you out. The what they ask you to do wears you out. There's a lot that goes into it. Listen, I tell people all the time, people laugh at me. I could go play a baseball game, like one game tomorrow, physically. But if I had to go play a 162-game season with the travel, the media, all the things that go into getting prepared for a major league game in a major league season, there's no way I could do it anymore. And I'm 47. And physically, again, people laugh. You know, you caught for 19 years in the major leagues. You should be beat up. I literally have no problems at all. Now, if you ask my wife, she'll say I'm mentally unstable, but I think that's just kind of standard procedure.
Back to those preachy women. The AJ, knees are good? Your knees are good?
Yeah, I got nothing. Literally, I have no knee problems, no hip problems, which is usually what a lot of catchers have. No back problems. No, I never had a arm problem. So, yeah, I don't know. I was very blessed.
Hey, so you've been retired 7 years, it sounds like. 47. You retired at roughly 40. You said you could go tomorrow and play one game. Does your eye-hand coordination deteriorate? Like, you have to have fast twitch eye-hand to bat. You got to diagnose a pitch. You know, I've read, and I don't know this firsthand, it's the hardest thing in sports, is what people say. Hitting a baseball, hardest thing in sports. And you could play a game tomorrow. You wouldn't, like, that fast twitch, pitch recognition, eye-hand coordination doesn't deteriorate over 7 years?
Well, listen, I didn't say I played it very well. I said I could physically do it. Now, I didn't say I could okay. Go back there and catch the game, and I could catch and do that part of it, especially now they catch on one knee. So I'd be like, man, this is, like, relaxing. I'm on a vacation back here. But hitting, yeah, I would probably need a couple days to see some pitches. I could probably make contact. I'd probably shatter my bat in about a million pieces, because these dudes throw really hard right now, and I'd probably strike out. But, I mean, yeah, physically, I didn't say I would be good at it. I just said I could do it.
Okay, so watching you on TV, this is why I said, I don't know how this will go, because watching you on TV, like, I think you're pretty authentically yourself, you know, and you don't suffer fools. And maybe I'm a fool here, but I don't think I am. I never do. So we'll just go with it. Do you think baseball right now, as we approach opening day, and I'm asking this honestly, open, AJ, because I don't know the answer to the question for a couple of reasons. Forgive the long windup here. Do you think baseball is healthy or sick? And here's what I mean by that. Like, I'm in a bubble. So personally, I can't see straight on baseball right now because I'm a Rangers fan. And, like, I have an afterglow, and I was super into the season last year. And so I'm all in on baseball. I read it in the offseason. I do hot stove stuff, you know. But if I'm being honest, when the Rangers weren't great, I wasn't attuned to baseball on a day-to-day basis as, like, a national fan. I read about, you know, the future of television rights, who's going to opt in, maybe who's going to opt out. I don't know. And I just wonder, as a national sport, you know, and that may be the answer, like, regional versus – because that's another thing. You read about, like, in-game ticket sales are actually doing really well for Major League Baseball teams, I believe. But, you know, on the note of the Rangers, their television provider is bankrupt, and it impacted who they could sign in the offseason. They had to bring budgets in after winning the World Series. So it just kind of makes me wonder, what is the health of baseball? Like, what's the status? Is this arrow pointed up or is it pointed down?
Personally, first of all, there's a pitch clock for the long windup, so we need to get you on board with the pitch clock, right? So you can streamline the question before we get into the, you know, this is why they put the pitch clock in, to lower the pace of, or speed up the pace of the game and lower the time. So listen, I think the game is healthy. I think it's healthier than what people want to say. I think if you look at attendance, you look at regional TV ratings, and even national, listen, national ratings, I work for Fox and I'm do the game of the week on Saturdays on Fox, and the ratings are good. The thing is that regional baseball is a regional sport played on a national level, right? So if you look at, you're a Rangers fan, you look at the Rangers ratings, they're through the roof, right? The attendance is up. I know they won the World Series, but then you go to the Astros and you go to different teams, the ratings are crazy. Even the Rays, who people are like, oh man, the Rays stink, no one goes to watch them, but you look at their TV ratings, they're really good. So the TV ratings aren't the problem. It's trying to get people to look outside of their region or their team. Like, you're a Rangers fan, and I know in the offseason, listen, on Foul Territory, the YouTube podcast we do, you know, 5 days a week, we talk all the teams. We talk all 30 teams. Well, we have reporters come on. They know their team. They don't know every team in the league. It's just a regional sport. The question is for Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball, how do we make it a national sport? How do we make it more NFL-y? And listen, there's only one game a week. It's never going to be that, right? How do you make it more NBA-y, though, right? And to promote our players more. And that's the one thing I think Major League Baseball has lacked for a long time, promoting their players on a national level. You don't know anything about Mike Trout, do you? He's one of the best players in the game, right? Bryce Harper, he's huge in Philadelphia. You know much about him off the field, right? These NBA guys, you know all kinds of things about him. You know LeBron James, you know Draymond Green, you know Steph Curry. You know these guys on and off the court. Baseball doesn't do that, and it's a problem that starts with the players and the front office, because the players are told, listen, when I came up, you know, 1998, I was first called up to the major leagues. Sit in your locker, don't speak unless spoken to. Well, it's changed now with social media, right? But guys are still afraid to take that next step and put themselves out there. Yes, you see more of it. Yes, you see more guys on social media putting more things out there. And it's great for the game, because people become fans of these guys because they're like, oh, man, I had a kid that was sick last night, right? I couldn't sleep either. Oh, Freddie Freeman, you know, his son Charlie was sick. Oh, he, you know, but things like that. Like, that matters to the fans. And I think we need to do a better job of marketing baseball. But overall, I think baseball is healthy. I think the new rules have helped. They sped up the game. The pitch clock, now there's some I don't agree with, like the obstruction thing they're throwing in this year, and some of the other, the bigger bases are kind of funny because they're gigantic. But overall, I think baseball is in a good spot. I think people, instead of, and I also think baseball needs to change the narrative. Like, we're, you know, like what you said, oh, it's not healthy. Why? Because the bankrupt. Listen, a lot of guys signed a lot of big contracts this offseason. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the positive things. It's always like, oh, woe is baseball. Screw that.
I get that. I don't want to be negative. I don't. This is actually just curiosity driven. I mean, look, I've never been more into baseball. I mean, back
to
your
Rangers
original
fan,
thing.
Listen,
like,
you should be jumping up and down.
Exactly.
You should be like, yeah,
exactly.
I know Rangers.
I am. Trust me, I am. I'm trying to decide if I should wear my throwback or my city edition third hat tomorrow, or my spring training hat tomorrow. And can I do that on Fox and Friends? But this is a little bit tied to the Rangers. You talked about contracts. So I'm not trying to be negative, but like, why did I see guys like Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell and Cody Bellinger? And I know they're all clients of Scott Boras. I don't know if he was your agent. And it's not about Scott Boras. It's like, it all just came in under expectations. They all signed 1 year deals, and again, it made me wonder, well, what's going on? Like, why is baseball? Those are three good players, right? I mean, for a couple of them, you could say great players, and they didn't find the market they wanted to find, and again, led me to the question: well, if the market's not what you expected, is baseball healthy?
Well, first of all, no, I did not have Scott Boras as an agent, so, but I know plenty of people that did. Here's the one thing I noticed this offseason. Every offseason is different. First of all, there were a lot of teams, because of the luxury tax, trying to get under it. So a lot of teams that normally spend, the Padres in the past, the Mariners, right? Even the Yankees to a smaller extent, and the Red Sox. These are big market teams. And even the Cubs, throw the Cubs in there. They weren't spending the huge amount of money that we have seen in the past. And then the Twins, right? Cutting payroll. The Cardinals didn't spend a ton this offseason. So a lot of these teams that we'd always said, oh, man, you can go to the blank, or you can go to the Astros, even, right? Even the Rangers, they've spent in the past. This year, they're all trying to kind of get under that luxury tax, which is like a fake salary cap that all the owners want. So there wasn't a huge market for a lot of these guys. Also, this offseason, if you signed early, you did better. The longer you waited, the less the chance of you getting the big contract. You look at, obviously, Otani was going to get what he got, but Yamamoto, right? Frankie Montas of the Reds got $16 million. A lot of the guys that signed early in the offseason did better. Why? I don't know. I can't explain that. But I think as Boris has always had the ability to do a couple things, right? Get his guys' contracts and publicize it. And then two, he's also had direct lines to a lot of these owners late in the offseason and say, he went to the Nationals and say, hey, sign, this guy. Or went to the Phillies and said, hey, sign Bryce Harper, the Padres, right? Sign Manny Machado in spring training. Well, a lot of those owners have backed away from doing that, and some of them have moved on. I mean, Peter Seidler in San Diego passed away, RIP, because he was a great owner. But some of these owners have changed their philosophy and are like, oh, you know what? We'll wait. And they got smart, and they're like, we'll wait. We'll get a one-year deal.
Right.
Why not? Right? Because then you look at the Yankees, right? Everyone's like, oh, sign Blake Snell. Well, with the way the luxury tax is set up, they signed him 1 year, $30 million. That's really like $66 million because it's 110%. On top of it, right? So they're like, why would we sign Blake Snell for 1 year and lose a draft pick? It's not going to happen unless we can get a deal for a long term that we agree to. We're not doing it. And smarter owners, smarter front offices, and sign early was kind of the theme of this offseason. Not that they're bad players, but it was just a weird offseason. And sometimes the market doesn't line up for when you're a free agent, Will. I mean, listen, if you're a free agent
right.
and you're doing TV, and you say, hey, I have Fox, I have CNN, and I have, MSNBC – and guess what? Fox and CNN aren't signing guys, right? And you're like, well, I have to go to MSNBC. They're offering me $500,000. I really think I'm worth $2 million. Well, guess what? You got to take the $500,000 if you want to do your job.
I don't think MSNBC is going to make me any offer.
Well, I'm just throwing the hypothetical.
You know
what I'm saying.
ESPN, Fox. I get it. I get the hypothetical. You brought him up. What do you think about Otani? I'm not talking about him as a player. What do you think about the story?
It's just an awful story. It's an awful situation. Listen, if he did nothing wrong, which I hope every baseball fan hopes he did nothing wrong, it's just a bad look, right? I mean, if the Ipe guy really did steal all that money from him and he had no idea, it's just bad for the game. It's bad that we're talking about this opening day. And every person wants to know, every single person I see now is like, what do you think, Otani? Did he gamble? Did he do this? Did he know? And I'm like, I don't know, guys. Like, there's a federal investigation going on. We're going to find it all out. Eventually. So I hope it's not true because he is the main draw right now. And I'm glad he did speak. People are like, well, do you think he should have spoke? I'm like, absolutely. Cause you got to see his reaction. You got to see him live. He got angry about it, which is a good thing. Now I know people can fake it and all that, but it's hard to go in front of cameras and say, I didn't know this was happening. And my only thing that I keep saying is, we talk about, lottery winners and getting stolen from them. Man, if someone's stealing $4.5 million from you though, I'm pretty sure at some point, especially with Otani's people, he's got to have CPAs and accountants and agents and all that stuff. At some point, you'd think somebody would be right. Like, hey, man, where's this money going to?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to bait you or push you. I mean, I'm on the record. I've done it on this show. I've done it on other shows. It just doesn't add up. It's just hard. I have a twofold thing here. Like, if he's not betting on baseball, I don't know that I care. Like, I don't care. If he's betting on baseball, that's a different thing. But regardless of how I feel, his story doesn't add up. It's just, it doesn't make sense that the translator, it's all him. Nothing about Otani's statements and positions makes any sense.
Hey, I'll be honest. I texted a couple of my friends and I was like, hey, since we're friends, because, apparently Otani gave him access to his bank account. I said, hey, can I have access to your bank account, guys? They're like, why? I'm like, because we're friends. And that's apparently what we do now. So I'll take access. Thank you. And I'll do what I want. You'll never look, never notice.
All right, let's end with baseball, actual baseball. I want to believe that the Texas Rangers could be one of the first teams. I think it's the first since the Yankees, would it be 99-2000 to repeat? And I'm super excited. Like, they're going to be better offensively. And people don't want too much in the weeds of the Texas Rangers. But Evan Carter, Wyatt Langford, I'm super excited about what the Rangers are doing. Of course, their pitching is going to be a question. And then there's also this, like, their division. And the rest of baseball, pretty good. The Mariners, the Astros, Braves, of course, and Dodgers. So how do you see this season? And baseball's the weird thing where you're going to probably pretty accurately tell me who has the most wins in the season, but you're going to have a hard time telling me who's going to win the World Series.
You're right, because I forget who I picked. I think I picked Astros and Braves, and obviously the Rangers went and won it against the Diamondbacks, who nobody picked to win anything, right? Listen, here for me, the National League is a little bit clearer than the American League. Braves, Dodgers, obviously, are the super teams in the National League, right? Then you could throw the Phillies. They're probably going to make the playoffs. I like where the Giants did this offseason. So there's four of your six playoff teams, right? Then you take the Central winner, Reds, Brewers, Cubs out of that division. Probably one of those teams is making it. So then you have to look and say, is it Diamondbacks, who I really love the Montgomery signing, or is it like a team like the Mets who come out of nowhere? So for me, it'd be the Diamondbacks. The National League is a little more put kind of set in stone. But when you get to the American League is when it gets crazy, because you can make a case for about, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10 different teams in the American League. Now, the Central is probably going to have one team. Fine. If you go to the West, you got the Mariners, like you said, your Rangers, the Astros are all good. Who's going to win the division? It came down to the last day last year, right? And then you go to the East and you have the Blue Jays, the Yankees, the Rays, right? All these teams, the Orioles, who are really good. So you're like, okay, the Red Sox, you know, they didn't do much this offseason, which I don't know why. But you, so then you're like, it gets more diluted in the American League. Well, who's the best team in the American League? You could say your Rangers when they get Scherzer and Molly and DeGrom back, right? But you could also say the Astros because they've done it. I mean, the American League to me is crazy. The National League, I think you can pretty much pick your playoff team. Now, who's going to win the World Series? I have no freaking clue. I wish I knew because I'd bet on it.
Real quick, AJ, who's the best pitcher you ever faced?
I love this question because people always say, who's the best pitcher you ever faced? Now, are we going off of like people that are in the Hall of Fame or people I couldn't get a hit off of? Because there's a completely different question. Like I faced Pedro, Randy Johnson.
When he took the mound, when he took the mound and you're in the batter's box, you know, you were like, it's a mystery. I got nothing.
Okay. So there's one guy I always tell, his name's BJ Ryan. He was an all-star. He pitched for the Orioles and the Blue Jays, right? I was 0 for 10 with nine strikeouts off him. I didn't strike out a lot. And I'll never forget, I was at the All-Star game 2006. It was in Pittsburgh. And he walked into the room. He was on the American League team with me. And I'm like, ah! And he's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I can't look you in the eyes. I'll turn to stone because you're like my kryptonite, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm melting just talking to you right now. And he's like, you're so funny. And then my last at bat off him, I hit a ground ball to the pitcher. And I was running to first celebrating. And he's like, you're such an Sorry, am I allowed to say that on this? And I was like, yeah, you know, I made contact off you. I want the ball. And he just started dying laughing because I just couldn't even put the ball in play.
BJ Ryan, your Medusa, your kryptonite when it comes to baseball. But World Series champion, all-star catcher, Fox Sports, Major League Baseball game analyst, and hell of a guest here on the Will Cain Show. I've loved it, AJ. Thanks for being on.
Thanks, Will. Appreciate it. Hopefully we can do it again.
All right, we will. AJ Pierzynski, there he goes. All right, coming up, is the problem with woke ideology preachy women? And why does the president of Mexico feel so confident that he can blackmail America? Is it because he sees at the other side of the table a mark in Joe Biden? That's next with Tommy Lahren.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
So we wanted to, as part of the show today, we put up the thumbnail, right? You see a picture and it says, what's the show's about today? And we wanted to put up a picture because our big guest today, AJ Pierzynski, huge guest, big guest. Our big guest today is Tommy Lahren. So a picture of maybe me and Tommy Lahren or Tommy Lahren and James Carville with the headline, The Problem with Preachy Women. And we were like, well, how's that going to go over with Tommy? So I asked Tommy, hey, how do you feel about this? And she's totally cool with it. So now, here on the Will Cain Show, streaming live at foxnews.com and the Fox News YouTube channel and the Fox News Facebook page, is the host of Tommy Lahren is fearless. She's fearless when it comes. She's fearless at having the word preachy next to her. Tommy Lahren.
Yeah, my husband would call me preachy about things like cleanliness and organization, tidiness, among other things. So preachy, of all the things I've been called, Will, I think I would take preachy. I know that that's not even necessarily directed towards me, but I will take it all day long. Trust me, there's been far worse things said.
I would actually like to see you and your husband, who, by the way, on the theme of Major League Baseball on our show today, was a Major League Baseball, was a pitcher forever. I would love to see that preachiness about the things you just said about cleaning up. JP, this kitchen is unacceptable. I want to hear Tommy Lahren in giving a Tommy Lahren take over household duties and chores to JP. That's my dream. Can you make this happen for me? Can you record a Tommy Lahren rant, but on domestic issues?
He would not like that very much. But here's the thing about my husband. He is Cuban, so he has this sense in his mind that fighting back against me is a good idea. So instead, you know, we're a year and a half into marriage. So instead of just letting me be right and saying sorry when sorry needs to be said, he still likes to argue with me. So that's why we butt heads. Oh. But it's okay because I like a good sparring partner. So it's okay with me because it keeps me sharp and it keeps me on my toes.
So he likes the fight. He likes the argument. And you and he's like my co-host on the weekend is Rachel Campos Duffy. And I don't know how you would win an argument with Rachel. I don't know. I mean, I don't see a path through the maze that ends with a victory parade. And she would be the first to admit. And so, like, I want to talk to Sean Duffy about how this goes, her husband. So you're telling me JP is the spicy Latino in your relationship, and he's there for the fight.
Well, here's the deal. We're both spicy. So that is wherein the fun lies, I suppose. Because normally in a relationship, you have somebody that's more submissive and somebody who's more alpha. But with us, it's two alphas. So I desperately need that, though, after, you know, years of dating somebody who just held my purse and took things out of it. I'd rather have somebody that fights against me. Yeah, we don't have to talk about that one. Whoops. No, I prefer it that way. I prefer somebody who, you know, can hold their own, even if they end up losing at the end.
Hold my purse and take things out of it. I'm doing my best not to follow natural curiosity and be conscientious of your command not to talk about that. But wow, I want to know more. I'm going to ask Tommy more in a minute, actually about her and JP, because I asked Tommy ahead of time. Hey, I would love to talk to you about this. She said, yeah, that's cool. But let's hit a little news. And I want to ask you about two things when it comes to illegal immigration. One is New York Mayor Eric Adams passing out, now, I believe it is debit cards with something like $350 on it to illegal immigrants. So if you're a family of four, you can get up to $1,500. By the way, these illegal immigrants, I mean, they're going to be targets for, you know, getting mugged. They're going to be targets for theft if they're walking around with, you know, cards that don't have to be verified by criminals. But second is, I was just blown away by the Mexican president saying, this problem is going to continue. This flow of illegal immigrants is going to continue until America sends billions of dollars south to address root causes. And I mean, it was clearly a statement of blackmail. And I just think it shows something, Tommy, about who he thinks sitting across from the table from him, somebody that he can blackmail.
Yeah, it's brazen to me. And something else that he said was that he's going to put Mexico and Mexicans first. I remember when we had a president that put America and Americans first. But here's the deal about that. Obviously, Joe Biden is not going to fight back against the premise that Mexico will not take the people or Mexico will not cooperate if not for X, Y, and Z. Joe Biden doesn't care because Joe Biden doesn't mind the open border. But if you had a Donald Trump presidency, we would just build the wall and Mexico really wouldn't have a choice. Because if Mexico is going to let people in through their border and then just pass them along, they would hit a giant wall and they would hit Border Patrol agents that were actually able to do their job. So that wouldn't be a problem. What Mexico wanted wouldn't really matter so much. But now at this point, I think this administration will bend over backwards to send money to other countries because, you know, why not? We're bankrolling the world. Meanwhile, the world is emptying its prisons into our backyard. And this administration doesn't even feign that it's concerned about the problem.
Yeah, and I don't think, again, I think that this part of this story is about leadership. And I mean it. Like, I think the Mexican president is telegraphing what he thinks of American leadership, what he thinks of Joe Biden. And he thinks he can extort that kind of money in the face of a problem. You know, nice little business there. Be ashamed if something happened to it. That's basically what he's saying to a weak store owner in Joe Biden. And I don't think, if I'm being 100% real, and you've had your criticisms of Donald Trump, and I think that absolves you of like saying, oh, I'm waving pom-poms or whatever. I think it's just very real to say he would never do that with Donald Trump. He wouldn't think he could extort Donald Trump. He wouldn't threaten blackmail. And the wall is part of the equation, but I think Trump would actually push it in the other direction. I mean, he talked about putting the cartels on the international terrorist list and what that would do to Mexico if they don't solve these problems. The push would be coming from the other direction. It'd be coming from America and not from Mexico.
Well, it was during the Trump presidency when he threatened tariffs. So he said that loud and clear to Mexico, you're either going to cooperate or you're going to get a tariff. We're also reinstating remain in Mexico would be the solution to a lot of this. And give Mexico no choice. It's these people, you're going to let them in, then you deal with them. Back when Donald Trump did that, the people in Tijuana were furious with that. They didn't want these people squatting in their backyard. They wanted to push them through. Donald Trump didn't allow that to happen. And guess what happened? The Mexican military was actually willing to cooperate. I was down at the border. I saw it with my own eyes, the Mexican military cooperating with our border patrol. You know, I was down on the border during the Trump presidency, and we were hoping we would see crossings. I mean, we would go up in the Black Hawk. We would be looking for people. You know, of course, me, I wanted to see illegal immigrants in the wild, so to speak. And we just really didn't see any during the later years of the Trump administration. And for good reason, because people didn't want to make that journey to either be detained or turned back around because they'd already paid thousands of dollars to get there. So it was a waste of their time and money. Right now, it's the best investment they could make. I mean, my goodness, now they're getting debit cards. What else are we going to give them?
Oh, posit that experience of yours against mine. I mean, I've been there down there several times, but I hosted Fox and Friends one morning. I would say I was 20 yards from, well, actually where a border wall ends, you know, and then it drops down into like quasi fence. And there, it comes and goes, you know how it is, but the Rio Grande runs right there and it kind of goes down a slope. I hosted Fox and Friends for, what is it, 4 hours on the weekend from right there. And while I'm there, I mean, literally off to my left, 20 yards away, illegal immigrants are crossing. You know, they're coming across the river. They're encountering Border Patrol. I think these were from Cuba, and that's fascinating in and of itself, because you think of Cuban illegal immigration through a boat to Florida, and they found it more fortuitous to go to Mexico and then come up through the southern border. That's my experience versus yours during Trump administration. I'm not even capable of seeing it happen. So, Tommy, we've had this conversation ongoing here on the Will Cain Show, and I find it challenging and interesting, and I want to see where you are. So the state of Florida has now, I believe, banned social media for kids under a certain age. The state of Texas recently did that with porn sites. Now, in order to effectively implement a ban, you have to verify people's ages, which would require the entirety of the population really to verify their age, which means, often is the case, a government-issued ID uploaded to the internet or to a site. And look, nobody wants to upload their ID to a porn site. So the question is, no one doubts that porn's bad for kids. Porn's bad for everybody, honestly. And no one doubts that social media is bad for kids. But the conversation we've had here is, are laws like this the way to solve it? Or are we compromising our privacy by turning over our parenting and our own personal good judgment to the government? What do you think is the right way to approach two things that we know are inherently bad for us, social media for kids and pornography?
Yeah, no, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. And I feel, you know, similarly when it comes to a TikTok ban, though I hate TikTok and though I do believe it's a tool for the Chinese Communist Party, it does worry me a little bit about the government overreach that would come from a ban and a precedent that would set. And I think the same thing can be applied to the social media ban in Florida or the porn ban in Texas. Well-intentioned, but this is all because we have a lapse in parenting. Let's be honest. It's because parents cannot control their own adolescence. And I understand that the internet is at their fingertips and it's very hard to keep it away from kids. But you and I have both seen it countless times, especially the amount of time we spend in airports and traveling. Parents use devices as babysitters. So if you're willing to put an iPad in front of your kid because you didn't want to get a babysitter and you want to go out to dinner or simply because you don't want to parent right now, then don't be surprised if your kid gets attached to it and addicted to it. And then don't turn around and blame social media for the problems you're having with your kid if you're willing to use it as a babysitting tool. So this is all a product of modern society and a lack of parenting. Parents need to step in. If you're a parent, I understand that everybody's got smartphones, all this, but I'm young enough to know that when I got a cell phone, my parents could regulate what I was doing, how much I was texting, who I was talking to. It can still be done. It just takes parents actually wanting to do it. Unfortunately, that's probably the biggest problem.
Well, how old were you when you first got a smartphone? Because you're quite a bit younger than me. And smartphones came out like in, what was it, like 08? Like the iPhone. Was that 05?
Well,
what was
that? I had a cell phone at 13 just to be able to communicate with my parents. But I think smartphones and the internet at your fingertips, that wasn't until, you know, much later when we actually, and I remember like my first picture phone, and obviously the photos were awful and grainy. So that was, you know, a little bit of a different story. Now, obviously, much more advanced. Kids are on Instagram, they're on TikTok, they're on everything. But, you know, I think parents need to decide what that age is, and they can put in protocols in place to make sure that they're monitoring what their kids are watching and looking at and who they're communicating with. It takes a little bit of extra effort, but you can't expect the government to step in and do your parenting for you. And I don't know why you'd want the government to do that, to be quite honest.
Totally agree with that conclusion. I think it's hard. And look, I have two boys, the oldest of which is 16. He got a phone when he was in, I believe it was eighth grade, which is pretty young. It's like, what is that, 14? And, you know, we said, don't be on this site. And they end up on Snapchat. That's the main one, right? And then they all, because that's like, they don't even text. That's how they communicate with one another. And then, you know, it just grows, Tommy. It's like, okay, then it's Instagram or it's TikTok usually, one of those. And I definitely don't want to outsource it to the government, but I do think it's worth acknowledging. It's hard because it is like, you know, my younger son doesn't have anything yet. And by the way, he's in seventh grade and he's the only kid I think in seventh grade that doesn't have a phone. The only one.
Wow.
And he doesn't bellyache about it. And that's nice, but he definitely lets me know, no, I'm left out. Yeah, for sure. Like there's stuff going on. So it's tough. Parents, you want your kids to make friends. You want them to be social. But like Jonathan Haidt has an article out, I think it's in, I don't know, one of the Atlantic maybe, talking about it's poison, specifically the smartphone and social media. It's poison on the young mind.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with kids having phones. I even think if they want to be on social media, you know, at an appropriate age and they have a private account and they want to post little pictures or whatever, I think that's fine. I honestly think it just goes back to parents and, you know, educating your kid on what they put out there and who they're talking to and letting them know that that's forever. If they send this picture or that picture or they say this or they say that, like lives can be ruined. And I'm, you know, I kind of go back to that whole scared straight notion. I mean, I think if you show kids, hey, this is going to be forever, this could ruin your life, I think they're going to be a little bit more hesitant to send the things that they're sending or say the things that they're saying. And it's not easy, I'm sure, by any means, to keep up with what kids are doing online. But I think if you just raise them with enough judgment to have the foresight to care about their future and the consequences, I think that goes a long way. But there's a lot of parents who just, quite frankly, don't. They just don't care. And they're into being friends with their kids instead of being a parent. And I think that's also a big part of the problem. Parents wanting to be cool.
Yes. I think that's absolutely. That is absolutely true. I asked Tommy ahead of the show. I wanted to ask you about this because it's a personal curiosity. I know Kaylee McEnany at Fox is married to a baseball player, former Major League Baseball player, as are you. And I think you both met your husbands in the same way. I think you met them through social media. You met them through DMs. And I was like, I want to ask Tommy what her DMs are like, because like, first of all, I checked out of the game, Tommy, way ahead of this being a way that like couples found each other. So Tommy, your DMs have got to be nuts. And JP pokes through.
Yeah. Well, that was also a different time. I met JP on Instagram. Kaylee met her husband on Twitter. A far nerdier way, by the way, than Instagram. More of an elder millennial way, I would say. And Kaylee and I have talked about this before, so it's all in good fun. But yeah, Instagram. So when I moved to Nashville in 2020, I was just enjoying life. So the DMs were popping, and I met everybody that I talked to on Instagram, because that's just the way that you date and meet people, is through Instagram, in my experience. Because first of all, this is 2020, 2021. We're all locked down. Although I will say that's the craziest time in Nashville was during lockdown. That's when everybody partied the hardest. But yeah, you know, Instagram is where I'm going to meet somebody, because can you imagine what it's like for me to try to decide, you know, if somebody's a liberal or they hate me or whatever it is, what it is. Usually you can pinpoint liberal men, so that's actually a little easier. But for me, yeah, Instagram. So I shamelessly say that I look for the blue check mark, and I saw it next to JP's name, and I have an affinity for athletes and, you know, masculine men. So, you know, it caught my eye, and I guess it just went from there.
Okay, but I'm going to follow up, and you can just tell me when you're done and, like, no more detail. But so you just said DMs, Instagram, pretty par for the course to meet people. So for the average dude out there, like, now you were looking for a blue check mark always, or did you date anyone from your DMs before you and JP got serious that wasn't a blue check mark? Like, I'm just curious how this works, because I think your DMs, my guess is, have to be bananas. Like, I don't even know how you would probably get to all of them, how you would read them all. And I think a lot of women in media, it's probably like that. And probably, I would guess, 70 to 80% of it's something you wish you never read. But there are normal guys out there making connections through Instagram, not star athletes. That's my question. Normal guys making connections through Instagram DMs?
I'm sure there are. I went through that phase, meeting people on Instagram that I couldn't check out first. Here's the deal about having a blue check mark. It's not about the status necessarily.
Right.
It's about being able to look into somebody, because if somebody is also a public figure, it makes the vetting process a lot easier, as I'm sure it does for me. I mean, it's pretty well known who I am and what I stand for. So it makes it a little easier. And if somebody is going to message me that's a public figure, they're probably going to be conservative unless they're wishing death upon me, because a liberal man is not going to try to hit on me on Instagram, because you know what you're going to get. I don't think you're wondering where I stand on the issues. So for me, it was just an easy way to vet somebody. And of course, JP's message was not like, hey, how you doing? It's like, thanks for all you do. That's the typical one I would get, would be like, thanks for what you do. And so at least it's like, all right, at least I've got a conservative on board, and then we can go from there.
All right. It's
And I got to ask you, I know that you're out of the game,
yeah,
but there have got to be, I mean, we know the demographic that's watching Fox and Friends. There have got to be a lot of women out there, especially a lot of middle-aged, maybe cougars out there, that have got to be hitting your DMs. I bet your DMs are far more lit than mine.
No, there's no way. There's no way. Next time we're in person, we can share. But there is no way. And by the way, why do they have to be middle-aged cougars? What are you saying about Fox? I mean, there's plenty of 20-year-olds. Like zero.
You think so? You think there's plenty of 20-year-olds getting up at 6 a.m. on Saturday? I have a feeling. And there's no shame to that. There's no shame to that whatsoever. But I just
big
have a feeling,
in the
if
demo,
we were to look at your requests, they would probably be a lot of middle-aged to older ladies in there that are big fans
no
of
idea.
Fox and Friends first. Or Fox and Friends on the
you
weekend.
You have no idea. That 6 a.m. on Sunday morning audience in the demo, you have no idea. It's nuts how many, you know, 28-year-old women are watching Fox and Friends at 6:30 a.m. No, I mean, it can happen. I'm not saying it never happens, but I mean, we'll leave it here. But the whole female experience on the internet, whole nother deal. Last thing I want to, because I know we have to go in just a second, and I've teased it, and I'm genuinely curious about it. James Carville talked about how stupid woke ideology is and it's killing the left. And then he pinned the blame for woke ideology on preachy women. And, you know, it's kind of funny. He said, a suspicion of mine is that there's too many preachy females. Don't drink beer. Don't watch football. Don't eat hamburgers. This is not good for you. If you listen to Democrat elites, NPR is not a place to go for that. And, you know, I mean, I think he's right. I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes piece on Sunday night about misinformation, and they had a misinformation expert on there, Tommy. She looked like the woman that James Carville is talking about.
Yeah. I think liberalism does things to the mind, the body, the appearance. So I don't think that that's off base to say what he said. And I think there's a lot of, and you know, when we're talking about women, obviously I'm going to put my feminist hat on for just a moment. Women who speak with conviction and passion on either side of the aisle are always going to be accused of being preachy or bossy or aggressive, more so than when a man does it. Let's just be honest about it. It's fine. We'll take it. I don't care. But women are going to be perceived as preachy, whereas men are going to be perceived as like philosophical. So let's just be honest about the double standard. But, you know, it's not a wrong thing to say that there are a lot of women in left-leaning media who don't seem fun to hang out with. They seem very stiff. They seem very bitter. They seem very angry. And that's a perception problem that the left has, and it's a perception based upon probably a lot of reality.
Yeah, but okay, as somebody, and I've been doing this job long enough that I think I've achieved some level of self-awareness. And one of the things people say to me, or have in the past more, is you can be too preachy. And I think to myself sometimes, be careful about that. And that's a lot about tone and how you're talking. But there's no doubt what you said is true about women. But let me just, so you, for example, you're very strong and assertive, and you have very strong opinions, and you say them really directly. But one thing I notice about you, for the most part, is you talk in ideas or public figures, and you speak assertively in a way that someone may call preachy about ideas and public figures. And I think what Carville is hitting on here is this tone within wokeism and perhaps larger within leftism to tell us as individuals how we're failing you, right? I'm not eating right. I'm drinking beer. I'm too toxic masculinity, whatever. And like much of the left, it feels like an attack on the audience. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know what the problem of America is? Americans. It keeps coming back to that. And it's this preachy woman telling us how Americans suck compared to the French.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's just women, though, because there's been plenty of men on mainstream talking about Trump supporters and how they're stupid and they're hillbillies and they're rednecks. I think it comes from just the left in general, demonizing middle America, middle class Americans. So I think that that's probably more of a leftist problem. And I think it's also a coastal problem. People that are not in Tennessee and they're not in Texas, people that are in Los Angeles or DC or New York, they preach to the rest of the country as if they are above the rest of the country. And I think that that's where a lot of that comes from, because they haven't been to the places that we've been. They haven't grown up where we've grown up. So I think it's about leftism. And I also think it's about coastal elitism, that they just don't understand middle America and middle class people. And because they don't understand them, they want to demonize them as the other. And that's a big problem that the left has, because they don't care about small town folks, or at least it doesn't seem that way.
I think all of that's true. I think also, by the way, leftism in general is a somewhat more feminine ideology. It places empathy at the forefront, and that's not always wrong. That's not always wrong, right? And everyone needs to be self-aware about where our holes in our game are. But empathy is a more easily accessible prism for women than it is for men, who think in different terms of priorities or hierarchy of thought. And you know, I don't know. The world needs to be safe. You need to be protected. That's just a more feminine outlook, as opposed to risk and tolerance and failure and all these things that kind of define an imperfect. Increasingly, Tommy, I don't want to be an ideologue. I want to be at one point I would say I'm proudly an ideologue. I think ideology takes the place of religion, in that it becomes a faith-based thing at some point. And I think you need to be pragmatic and logical and common sense. And that's increasingly my prism. I need to let you go, because I need to let you go do Tommy Lehrer and his Fearless. Next time we're together, by the way, you talk about how we grew up. I've never asked you about South Dakota. So I'm fascinated by South Dakota, and I want to talk about South Dakota. Did your dad raise cattle? Were you on a ranch?
I didn't grow up on a ranch, but both my parents did. So we still have a ranch in the family. So I've got ranching on both sides. And I grew up out in the country. So South Dakota, I would love to talk about South Dakota. I also want to bring up one thing before you do let me go. And you did an episode with Jesse Waters, and you guys talked about the things that men, grown men, should not do. And I commented on the Instagram page. I have a lot of ideas about what grown men should not do. I will channel my inner preachiness for that. And I commented on there, and I just need to explain it to your audience. Someone else actually made the same comment, so I'm not alone on this. I don't believe that men over the age of 25 should ever wear another man's name on their back, a jersey. I think it just screams beta. I can't imagine being a grown man wearing another man's name. It just says, like, I own you and I don't even know you. So that, I just want to throw that out there because I'm wondering your take on it. I know you're a big, obviously, you're a big Cowboys fan. You're a big sports fan. And I have to know, Will, do you wear other men's last names on your back?
Okay, well, I'm going to, again, you have a show to go do. But if you'd asked me this question 5 years ago, Tommy, I would have had a very strong take. And I would have said, I am with you 100%, anti-jersey. But I have made a promise to myself and this audience to be real. And I have thrown a Dak jersey on during a game. Now, I've asked myself, why are you doing this, Will? Is it because you've become kind of a professional fan, you know, and you talk about the Cowboys so much? Like, I'm trying, like, why am I doing this? And I have a Luka t-shirt, not a jersey, but what do you call it? Like a real cheap version of it. So I'm a violator of my own rule on those two occasions. I don't collect jerseys to wear on all occasions. I think what happened, Tommy, is first take when I was on ESPN broke the seal because they'd have me wear the jersey to come out and troll Stephen A. Smith. Next thing you know, I'm wearing a jersey on ESPN and like the seal's been broken and I turned into a D-bag. That's what happened. Okay. Bottom line. And so send me a JP jersey.
I will. And here, and the thing about you can display other jerseys. I have a basement full of other jerseys that my husband has collected over the years from other players. And I even said, like, why is there all these Aaron Sebia jerseys and then there's a Verlander jersey in the middle? I was like, I think you should just put yours up. But that one was very special to him, so whatever. Put it up on the wall. But to wear it on your back, I think you're like a walking poster board. Like, hey, I think this man is better than me in every way. And I just don't know why a man would want to do that to themselves.
Well, if we're being honest, we're not all equal. And do we all think that we're at the top of the mountain? There are some men that are better than you. And you just have to acknowledge where you are on that ladder.
And then just wear it with pride, episode. I suppose.
That's a whole future episode. I've heard guys talk about that. When you recognize, he's better than me.
And then you're like, and I'm going to wear it. I would rather have a man wear a Taylor Swift Eras tour merchandise shirt than another man's jersey.
Than a jersey.
I think that's more masculine. But I know we'll have to leave it there. But I just want your audience to ponder that. And I want the men listening to just really think about it inside and see where they are with it.
Well, next time, not only talking about South Dakota, we'll run through the rules for men with Tommy Lahren. The host of Tommy Lahren is Fearless. Make sure you check it out on OutKick. Awesome having you, Tommy. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Will. I appreciate it.
All right. Coming up here on the Will Cain Show, we're going to talk about how much money does $1.13 billion do it for you. That's the latest winner of the Mega Millions Lotto. But how many lotto winners go broke? And where would that put you, for example, in the New York area? If you had, let's call it $300 million after taxes, would you make the top 50 richest New Yorkers? That's coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But we talk about it every day. Every day here on The Will Cain Show. It's getting crazier and crazier. We talk about political turmoil. We talk about economic concerns. The cost of living is through the roof. Inflation. And the reason for that, the Fed printing dollars, just continues. They continue to. Even though they're trying to raise interest rates, they are not taming inflation. And it doesn't feel like they have any idea how to control what is out of control. Inflation. And if the dollar gets dumped, which is the king, the world's reserve currency, and it continues to decline, where are you going to go? Well, you need gold. Why gold? Things we talk about here. History. tradition, if something holds value over time, if it survives humanity over hundreds of years or centuries, it has inherent value, and gold has long history as a safe haven for investors who want to preserve their wealth and hedge against those uncertainties in the economy that we're experiencing and talking about today. That's why now is the time to educate yourself about gold, and I strongly recommend that you call my friends at Lear Capital. They have over 25 years of experience, thousands of five-star reviews, and a 24-hour risk-free purchase guarantee. Look, Lear is who I trust when I buy my gold. So give them a call at 1-800-920-8388 or go to learwill.com. Their gold and silver specialists are great to talk with. They'll answer your questions and send you free information. And for a limited time, our listeners can get up to $15,000 in bonus gold and silver with a qualified purchase. Write this number down. It's 800-920-8388. That's 800-920-8388, or go to learwill.com. That's LEARWILL.com. How much gold could you buy with $1.13 billion? That's next on The Will Cain Show. I have a question for you. Would you rather make $50,000 a year when everyone else makes $25,000 around you in your community? Or would you rather make $100,000 a year, but everyone around you makes $200,000? It's The Will Cain Show, streaming live at FoxNews.com, the Fox News YouTube channel, the Fox News Facebook page, and always on demand at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Subscribe, audio format, or on YouTube right here. You can get The Will Cain Show in its entirety. You can go back and watch that interview with Jesse Waters that Tommy was referencing. Tommy Lahren was talking about the rules for men. It's up there. Will Cain Show on YouTube. Just hit subscribe. So $1.13 billion. That's what the winner of the Mega Millions just received. It's the fifth largest payout in lottery history. For the record, by the way, the largest payday is $1.6 billion, I believe, which was not that long ago. But $1.13 billion to someone in New Jersey. And it made me think about all kinds of things when it comes to money and how much money does it take for you to be happy? And what is the relationship between money and happiness? People have often said, by the way, you know, yeah, money does lead to happiness to a certain extent. In the past, I believe that figure was like in $130,000 range. And money up to that annual salary increases you covering the necessities and providing a few luxuries that money after that has a diminishing return in bringing to you. I'm sure inflation's adjusted that number. I'm sure it's higher than the last time I saw that stat. But money does make you happier until it doesn't, or has a diminishing return effect on making you happier. I have heard people say that one of the big luxury purchases that no doubt makes your life better is a private plane. Those dudes, they act like their life has just hit a different level of happiness. But it's, I mean, obviously, $1.13 billion should do the trick. But I did want to know, like, what does that actually mean? So you have two ways to bring in the lotto, right? You can take annual payments spread out for the full amount over your lifetime, or you can take the immediate lump sum. The immediate lump sum for the $1.13 billion lottery was $537 million. Every smart friend I've ever had in finance has said, take the lump sum, take the upfront money. Opportunity cost, you can go invest it, it earns on itself, and so forth. But of course, you don't get $537 million. So what do you get? So look this up. Federal taxes on lotto winnings, I believe, are fixed at 24%. In the state of New Jersey, lotto winnings over $500,000 are subject to an 8% tax. So you're looking at a 32% chunk to the government out of your $537 million, which would put you at $365 million liquid to improve your life. Now, where would that put you? If life is comparative, and not that it should or shouldn't be, but if we always are like, how tall are you? Well, how tall everybody around me? How good looking are you? How good looking is everybody around me? How rich are you? Well, how rich is everybody around me? I found this study from Henley and Partners on the richest cities in America. Fascinating. So here's the richest cities in America in terms of billionaires, 100 millionaires, and millionaires. New York has 340,000 millionaires. It's up 40% in the last decade. New York has 724 millionaires and 58 billionaires. The top five goes like this after New York. The Bay Area, number two. L.A., number three. Chicago, number four. Houston, number five. Somewhat uninteresting because it follows population. Those are pretty much the five biggest cities in America. Fastest growing city for millionaires, Austin, Texas. Outlier in this chart, Bay Area, fewer millionaires than New York, fewer hundred millionaires than New York, more billionaires than New York. I give you Silicon Valley. But here's my big takeaway from this ranking. You take for granted that your economy is always going to grow. That's always going to go up. But I give you Tokyo, with the number of millionaires and 100 millionaires down 5% over the last 10 years. London, down 15% over the last 10 years. Hong Kong, down 22% over the last 10 years. Economies don't just go in one direction. Ask the Japanese how their economy's been for the last quarter of a century. But $365 million will put you within, in the New Jersey area, the top 720 richest people in that city, which, if life is comparative, should make you pretty happy. But then you got to confront this fact. According to some studies, 70% of lottery winners go broke. This is where we started the show talking to AJ Pruszynski about professional athletes thinking the money's going to go on forever. It doesn't go on forever. 70% of lotto winners go broke. So clearly, they missed something in the equation of simply that much money satisfying everything you need to be happy, at least over a long period of time. Taking us back to our hypothetical, would you rather make $50,000 when everybody else makes $25,000, or would you rather make $100,000 when everybody else makes $200,000? Let's ask the guys back in the control room before we go today. Two-a-days. Young Establishment James, and Tinfoil Pat. Let me get the quick answer from all of you guys. Which do you pick from the Harvard study? Do you take less money, but more than everybody else, or more money and less than everybody else?
You go first, Establishment James.
Oh, that's tough. That's really tough. I think if cost of living is higher, you take the higher salary. Or if cost of living is better, you'll take the higher salary.
Yeah.
So the argument, for the record, that the people make is if you make $100,000 in an environment of $200,000, then everything is going to be priced at a $200,000 level, and you won't necessarily have all the benefits of making more money if you were at 50. Now, the problem with that argument is it assumes that wealth is only contextual, right? Where, look, we can see in America the idea of capitalism that a rising tide lifts all boats is true. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the poorest among us live like middle class in the rest of the world. We live like kings compared to people from the past. So, you know, $100,000 is still $100,000 and can afford a wealthier, maybe not, it depends on how we define wealthy. It can afford a higher standard of living.
Yeah, I think I'm going with the $100,000. Because I don't really mind what people around me are making. If I have a higher standard of living, I'm okay with that. And that's it. That's where I'll stay at. I don't mind the neighbor thing. It won't affect me in a way that maybe that makes me like, you know, what they're saying, you know, beta or whatever. I don't care. You know, I'll take the more money and have people around me make a little more.
Hold on. I appreciate that you are Zen master two-a-days. But let me just change the equation for you, all right?
Go ahead.
Dan, would you rather your IQ be 110 and everybody around you a 90, or would you rather your IQ be 130 but everybody around you is 150?
Oh, that's tough.
You're objectively smarter, but you feel dumber.
Well, now you're getting into something different. I think I would go with the higher IQ then, for sure, but just a little bit smarter.
So you're saying you'd rather be the dumb guy in the room, even if you're smarter.
Sure, because I'm still smart. I mean, relatively, or comparatively, I'm smart too, so it doesn't matter. That's a high IQ.
I got one more for you, Dan.
Okay.
Since you're the Zen master here.
All right.
Okay? Always looking for self-improvement, not wanting to bring others down. I appreciate that about you.
Yeah, of course.
Would you rather your physical attractiveness be a 6 and everybody else is a 4, or would you rather be an 8 but everybody else is a 10?
6-4 real fast.
Is it different guys and girls? What's the breakdown gender there? That's very important.
Yeah, I'm bowing down to this
so
one.
So you'd rather be the best looking dude in a room of ugly people than the worst looking dude in a room of good looking people.
Yes, correct. That was a fast answer too.
All right, tinfoil Pat, you taking more money or higher prestige?
Yeah, all things the same. I think more money makes a lot more sense. You know, I mean, it just, you know, you don't want to be the, well, I don't think I can say that on here. Like the tallest midget, you know, out there. So you want to be,
you can say it.
Yeah, I just did. So, it's like, you look at Haiti,
if you're in
like,
a village of little people,
a rich guy in Haiti.
The point is, hold on, Patrick. If you're in a village of little people and you're the tallest little person, you're the tall guy.
Like, right.
You never know that you're not actually tall.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm okay with having more money, you know, in that situation.
I think I am too. I take the 100 and trust myself to build upon a better standard of living. I don't like the idea of dragging other people down to make yourself better. I want all of us to succeed, and I am competitive, and I do want to succeed too, but I don't think wealth and all that's a zero-sum game. I do think a rising tide lifts all boats. So, that being said, I will take my lump sum payment. I'll take the $365 million. I will be in the 30%. I will not burn it up. I will not go broke, and I'll be happy that there are 700 people richer than me in New York. That's going to do it for me today here on The Will Cain Show. It's been a fun one. Go download, subscribe, YouTube, Apple, Spotify. I'll see you again next time. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcast and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.